now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slam of pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really couldn't devour him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change lane. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. It is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. We are here once again Tuesday night to give you action-packed wrestling trivia, wrestling news, wrestling, and so much wrestling that we crave wrestling. How apropos for that, correct? Let's have some fun tonight. I am your host, Chris Featherstone, and as we do every week, log on to the chat room, got some fun trivia, a bunch of trivia in store, and we'll get as much as we can out of it today. But just ongoing, just there's never enough wrestling trivia, and so just years and years and years, and I always have just trivia in my head and thinking, having a lot of good time with it. Call in 347-884-8452 is the number to call in live for your Hell in a Cell thoughts or whatever you have, Raw, SmackDown, Impact Wrestling, ROH. Flavor of the week this week is the top heel turn theme songs in pro wrestling history. So, got about 12 or 13 good ones. I wrote an article about it today on Bleacher Report. It's getting some good hits and good comments. So let's get, as we do always. Also, send your tweets at Crave Wrestling. We usually have some good tweets every week as well. Once again, the tweet at Crave Wrestling. And once again, the number is 347-884-8452. And log on into the chat room for the wrestling trivia. Before we go to this week's news, we'll open up with a trivia question. Who managed Hulk Hogan during his first stint in the WWE? Who managed Hulk Hogan in his first stint in the WWE? This week's news. Unfortunately, Lillian Garcia was struck by a car this week. Suffered multiple contusions and lacerations. Since the original report, she has been released, and she just recently thanked the fans via tout. So it was good that she's recovering, and definitely prayers are with her and her family. DDP is training legendary wrestler Jake Roberts for one last hurrah, one last wrestling run. I believe he is upwards of 60 years old now, if I'm not mistaken, 57, maybe off a year or two, but I believe he's 57 years old now. So, yeah, Jake Roberts, he's one of my favorites of all time, but you got to know when to say no. So, hopefully, I think he's lost about 35 pounds since they start training a few months ago, and actually moved in with DDP, and so he's ready to go. He just recently retired too, because he's been just battling a lot of just personal problems, and definitely pray that everything goes well with him as far as his personal problems are concerned. Just it's been just years of just dealing with certain things, and you know, my prayers go out to Jake Roberts, because there's no way in the world that he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame right now. That's just a travesty to me. He's one of the best minds of wrestling history, and he definitely should be in the Hall of Fame. So it would be good to see him, you know, a couple of spots here and there, but a full-fledged wrestling run, not too sure about that. Jerry Lawler returns in 2 weeks. And so it'll be exciting to see him back, you know, from his unfortunate heart attack. So, you know, I'm sure he'll be very excited to come back. And then finally, Kurt Angle blames the WWE for stealing storyline that they're referencing. He was referencing is the new AJ and John Cena storyline, and he actually said that they are kind of borrowing that or using it or maybe even stealing it from the recent Claire Lynch storyline that TNA was having with Daniels and Kazarian and AJ. That was a relative flop to me. It went a little bit too long. It was a little bit creative in the beginning, but you know, of course she wasn't pregnant, so it was just one of those storylines that just leads to nowhere. And so, you don't know. You know, it's just one of them things that's, you know, I don't know if Kurt Angle really had the time to, I don't understand why he would just make that type of comment, because, I mean, who cares, really? I mean, you know, if they did borrow the storyline, the Claire Lynch storyline didn't really lead to nowhere, so you know, if they're trying to mimic that storyline, yeah, that doesn't do much. So, yes, Freddie Blassie is indeed the right answer. The next question is, what was Taz's wrestling name before ECW? What was Taz's wrestling name before ECW? Once again, call in with your Hell in a Cell thoughts. About to go into Hell in a Cell here. 347-884-8452. Send your tweets to @CraveWrestling. Feel free to flood the chat room. It's usually where we have the trivia answers at, unless you do want to call and you feel bold enough to say the answer online. Once again, right now, the answer out, the question is, what was Taz's wrestling name before ECW? All right, let's go into Hell in a Cell. First, start off with Randy Orton defeating Alberto Del Rio. I'll tell you what, the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, it wasn't much hype to it. It was just kind of thrown in just because of the John Cena injury, just kind of really made it off kilter a little bit. But they tried to start hyping it up a little bit, try to gain some momentum with the Ryback thing. I think it was about a week or two too late, but I definitely bought into the potential Ryback winning the title. But just saying all this to say right now, I think it was so many miscues on that pay-per-view, and as much as I can remember miscues, I'll definitely say them. One of the miscues was the first match with Randy Orton, Alberto Del Rio. I think one of them would try to kick, and then one of them tried to punch him, and then they didn't know whether to whip one another. It was just like about 3 or 4 seconds of just sheer awkwardness, and it was just really, really weird. But the final spot that Alberto Del Rio does tries to do the enziguri from the ropes, and Orton catches him and does a RKO. That was pretty good. So I'll definitely give that to Randy Orton for the terrible spots, the terrible miscues from a point in time. It wasn't a terrible match, but I expected a little bit more from Alberto Del Rio and Randy Orton. Yes, Tasmaniac is indeed the correct answer. Great job. Next question is, what current WWE employee was the flag bearer for the sheep herders? What current WWE employee was the flag bearer for the sheep herders? I don't know. That may stump some people, but I've been getting some good tweets and good answers in the chat room the past few weeks since I started this. So it looks like I'm asking this to some really crave wrestling fans, literally wrestling fans that's been that knows their stuff. So that's why I decided to do it, and that's why I love doing it. So definitely kudos to the people who answer the questions. Even if they get them wrong, you know, at least make a shot at it. Once again, what current WWE employee was the flag bearer for the Sheepherders back in the NWA? The Sheepherders was, and if you want to one-up me, actually, what was the Sheepherders' name in the WWE? So we will go on to the next match, which is Team Road Scholars defeating Team Hell No by disqualification. That really, Bushwhackers is indeed the right answer. I mean, the match between these two, they really didn't. It was just kind of odd. The DQ call was just kind of weird. It seems like they didn't want to make Road Scholars like a one and done type of team, which I can understand. I don't see Road Scholars like being a solidified tag team. It just seems like it's just two people thrown in right now. I honestly believe, and I think I've said this before, I honestly believe that this is actually a step down for Damian Sandow, not so much Cody Rhodes, because Cody Rhodes was just getting jobbed every week just about. This is a bit of a step up for Cody. And a step up for Cody is not a step up, period. This just makes him, you know, where he was before. I mean, he had, it was a makeshift tag team with him and Drew McIntyre that won the tag titles too. So, you know, of course a makeshift tag team with him and Hardcore Holly, probably the only tag team partner that was actually legit was Ted DiBiase. So I don't know what they're ultimately want to do with Cody Rhodes. He has all the potential in the world, but they're just not really giving him the go-ahead. And I guess the DQ call was just to give them a little bit more momentum. But as we saw with, you know, what they decided to do with Survivor Series, that didn't really make any sense. So, we'll see what happened in that. Kofi Kingston defeats The Miz. Three straight losses from The Miz, which makes it a bit tough because the thing is that The Miz, there's some talks about pushing him and to the main event level, but all of these series of losses, and then, you know, what happened with at the end of Raw, it seems like he's going to be pretty stuck for a while. Like I said, you know, the WWE has pretty much pigeonholed themselves with the whole Rock being in the main event at Royal Rumble, so it's hard for me to believe that he'll be in the main event anytime soon. The Miz, to me, is just not. He's not a main event guy. I mean, he's an upper mid carder. You know, I'll be fine if he stays upper mid card. You know, he's an asset to the company. The WWE needs him. You know, he's actually a decent commentator as well. So he's not expendable to me, but at the same time, he's just not a main event guy. Let's go on to Antonio Cesaro defeating Justin Gabriel. It's pretty self-explanatory. I did like what they did with Raw, though, as far as where the U.S. title was leading to. Rey Mysterio and Sin Cara defeats Primetime Players. I like this this match as well. This was definitely a good match just to have at the pay-per-view, just to revive the tag division. I really think that the tag division is getting revived. I definitely got to give kudos to WWE for that. Basically, reports say that's a Triple H decision, and definitely a good one. Definitely a good one. And in my opinion, the shocker of the night, the Big Show defeats Sheamus and becomes the World Heavyweight Champion. This came out of nowhere to me. I thought that the Big Show was just going to be a sacrificial lamb to Sheamus eventually feuding with either Wade Barrett or Dolph Ziggler, but they really decided to put the belt on Show. You know, he deserves more than a 45-second run, and so I'm definitely happy that they decided to do that. You know, but I don't know. Like I said before in previous shows, he's an enforcer. He should play an enforcer role for CM Punk and Paul Heyman. You know, other than that, you know, I don't think that the Big Show is should be in the main event picture right now, especially the champion. I mean, there's at least two people that should be in the mix other than Big Show, but at the same time, on the other end, he deserves it. He's been wrestling for quite some time. I believe 95 was his first year, if I'm not mistaken, so 17 years. So, you know, in that regard, you know, kudos to Big Show. So, Luke and Butch was the Bushwhackers, yes, but flag bearer for the Sheepherders. So, I'm going to bring in our Raw correspondent Derek here soon to lead us off to the Raw talk. Got a couple more matches here for Hell in a Cell. Eve defeats Caitlin and Layla. Yeah, I mean that those are pretty much the only three people that are just around the Divas division anymore. So that's going to get stale. And then finally, CM Punk defeats Ryback. Now, I was incredibly disappointed with this, the outcome for this. I was not happy at all. There was weeks and weeks of, well, a couple weeks of wondering who was, you know, what the finish was going to be. And it seemed like they, you know, it was down to the wire just wondering what the finish is going to be. But at the same time, it's, I mean, there was even talks of Lesnar coming back. I even heard somewhere Mark Henry, you know, like, and the thing is, it's and even Heyman, you know, being involved. But out of all of the possible, you know, options, they come up with Brad Maddox, the referee, low-blowing Ryback and screwing him on a finish. I don't think that was creative at all. It seemed like that was just a way out, you know, to, because like I said, they put themselves in a bind with the whole John Cena injury thing, and, you know, just that was just not good at all. Of course, Ryback gets his retribution as they he beats up Maddox, and that retro Bam Bam Bigelow and Spike Dudley spot that they did when Ryback threw Maddox out the ring and he hit the cage. That was brutal. And then, of course, at the end, he chanced to feed me more on top of the cage when he shell shocks Punk. You know, I can understand that they're doing that just to keep Ryback's character relevant. But that screwy finish, that was incredibly ridiculous to me. So I would even prefer a group of people come in, like mid-carders, like Tensai, 3MB, like five or six people come at the same time or something. But Brad Maddox, that was incredibly stupid. So overall, a little bit under what I expected for the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, but you know, they kind of threw it together at the last minute as far as the main event's concerned. So there was a little bit of hype to it, but it wasn't enough. So before we start Raw, let's bring in our Raw correspondent, Derek, to start us off with the Raw talk. What you got, Derek?
Raw talk. Again, it was kind of a lackluster Raw. Pancakes and Power Slams forever. Love this show. But they kind of built up to the Survivor Series, which you could see when they were forming the teams and everything. And the traditional Survivor Series where you have teams, that's great. I hope they follow along with that. Just however, the talent they have now doesn't compare to anything that they used to have. However, CM Punk and Ryback match at Hell in a Cell, I didn't see the pay-per-view. I saw some reviews and I heard people that talked about it and said it was probably the worst Hell in a Cell match that there ever was. It was short. There was nothing. There was no grisly that you expect from a Hell in a Cell with The Undertaker and the Shawn Michaels and the Mick Foley that had back in the day, and even back to the last WrestleMania. that it just didn't have that. And when you kind of look at what the referee did, he kind of reminds you, if you're old enough, back in the 80s, Dangerous Danny Davis did that to the Hart Foundation.
Oh, yeah.
They were with the British Bulldogs. And, I mean, that was a great angle back in the day. And I mean, if that can survive again today, then great. But there's still people like me that remember that. And good luck with that. I hope that works. But if it doesn't, then it was just a pointless thing to do. And CM Punk, I have no support for him. I think his character needs to be reworked, redone. It's stale and old. Other than that, Ryback has kind of lost pretty much most of his credibility from what happened. I mean, that's unfortunate. It was out of his control. He could have been kind of the next Goldberg, if that's what you wanted to look at him as that. But Goldberg wouldn't have went down that soon. And, yeah, I know what you mean when it comes to, you know, where's the WWF going in what direction? WWE, I'm sorry. But let me know what you think, and what's up? See ya.
Thanks a lot, Derek. Awesome, awesome commentary there. I want to bring up one thing that he said that was really interesting, the Dangerous Danny Davis angle back in the day. I do remember that vividly, and I think it was a good angle. And it is comparable because both Danny Davis and Brad Maddox were wrestlers. They're legitimate wrestlers. Both of them are legitimate wrestlers. So, but the whole Maddox thing, it was just it just seems like it was just a throwaway angle. And like Derek was saying, you know, if it was, it was pointless. But even if it's not, though, I mean, I still don't see anything of worth for this angle. I mean, it's just another addition to just some conglomerate of an angle. You know, it's just kind of weird to me. And I hope not, because I don't think Brad Maddox has a purpose. In this feud, they would just throw in another body that is not that relevant at all. So, awesome job, Derek, with the commentary this week. No tweets. Looks like I've stumped some people. The answer is John Laurinaitis. When he was Johnny Ace, he was a flag bearer for the sheep herders. So he was the initial flag bearer for the sheep herders in the NWA, WCW days, like the world championship wrestling version of the NWA. So that next question is, what WCW tag team was known as the Enforcers? What WCW tag team was known as the Enforcers? So yeah, let's go on to Raw here. CM Punk in-ring promo. He denies having to do anything with referee Brad Maddox's screw job. Foley comes out and confronts CM Punk. Punk makes a Team Foley and Team Punk match at Survivor Series, and Foley accepts. Ryback comes out, and Punk runs away. That was an interesting spot. It was a pretty predictable spot, because especially when Ryback comes out and then how they set it up at the end, it was just like, oh, okay, am I supposed to be surprised? So we'll go, you know, when that point comes towards the end, we'll talk a little bit more about that. But, you know, it didn't really surprise me at all. So it was just a predictable spot. It was good to see Foley, though. But I tell you what, man, I'm a Foley fan. But it seems like he's getting more and more pitiful looking every time we see him on the WWE. But yeah, I mean, when he was in, I think it was 2005, he had the match against Randy Orton, hardcore match. And they were talking about how he lost a lot of weight and got back in shape for the feud. But yeah, now it's just kind of sad. So, but you know, it's always good to see Foley, and he can cut a promo to save his life every time. He's definitely an amazing promo cutter. Definitely is a good promo cutter for Punk too. He goes along and plays along well with Punk too. So that was a good idea. Team Foley, I was fine with too. So we later found out who the participants was. I was expecting different. We'll talk about that a little later. But having Team Foley was a good idea, of not having a wrestler be a part of it, him not wrestling, but having his own team. I like that. I believe Derek was, he also talked about the traditional feel for the Survivor Series. It's a great idea. And actually, you know, to go a little bit more into that, I actually hope they have at least one more traditional match. I can see something like 3MB and the primetime players against like Sin Cara, Rey Mysterio, Team Cobra, and Brodus Clay. And that'll probably be a good 10-man tag match of a bunch of mid-carders that have, you know, those, and even maybe throw Tensai in there instead of some, you know, I don't know. I mean, Tensai, somehow it gets in there. I don't know where at. You know, there's still Tyson Kidd, Justin Gabriel, Cesaro, which probably will have a spot, but there's a bunch of mid-carders that can make at least two either 8-man or 10-man tag matches. So hopefully they really run with that, seeing how, as we saw at the end, three titles won't be defended on SummerSlam, on Survivor Series, which I'll have my thoughts about that a little later. Let's see here. Only an Arn is the only answer that I got for the Enforcers. That is not true. But I will say that Arn was half of it. To give a clue, they were aligned with the Dangerous Alliance. They were aligned with the Dangerous Alliance. Then we had Ryback defeat JTG. JTG seems like he's getting a little bigger in shape, and that's good. I don't know what it is about JTG, though. He's just, I don't know, maybe I'm so trapped in the whole Crime Time gimmick. He's a heel now, but that doesn't really mean anything with JTG. He's not really doing anything. You know, he's fed to Ryback, and that's pretty much all he's good for these days, which is a little sad because he's got a lot of talent, but doesn't mean anything right now. Let's see. I'll just give the answer. All the answers are wrong so far. It is Arn Anderson and Larry Zbyszko were the enforcers. They were with the Dangerous Alliance. Who did Pat Patterson defeat to become the first Intercontinental Champion? Who did Pat Patterson defeat to become the first Intercontinental Champion? 1979, Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. The North American heavyweight title merges with the Phantom South American heavyweight title. And who was Pat Patterson's opponent in 1979 to become the first Intercontinental Champion? All right, let's go on to further Raw here. Randy Orton defeats Wade Barrett. Good match between the two, but here's the thing, though. Why are they jobbing Wade Barrett? I mean, it was a good... I'm glad, you know, we'll go into SmackDown, and it was a pretty interesting decision right before Hell in a Cell of how they booked that, but I'm confused. I'm confused of why they are deciding to job Wade Barrett at this juncture. I don't think it's a good idea at all. He came with an amazing vignette, and I think his debut match was against Yoshitatsu, and, you know, there's a couple other mid-carders that he beat along the way. Had some good matches with Sheamus. A couple of them led to DQs, and then he lost to Sheamus. And then a couple Randy Orton matches. You know, but, you know, what does that mean? So, you know, hopefully they do something good with Barrett. Do not, please do not drop the ball with Wade Barrett. His new look is great. His music is great. His character is really good, and I really hope that they don't drop the ball with Wade Barrett. That would just be a travesty. Then we have Vicky and AJ backstage segment. You know, basically AJ's trying to get her job back, and more in the saga of the fraternizing, and yeah, Vicky Guerrero as any type of authoritative role to me these days is just not cutting it. I think it's a bad idea, and I don't see any point. I don't like it. I don't like it. I don't like the direction. I don't see why she has to have this managing supervisor role just to be important, or just to make the angle important. You know, why not have a vacant general manager again? I mean, technically, I guess the position is vacant. They just need some type of authority figure. It being Vicky Guerrero, I'm not buying it. SmackDown called back in 2008, and they said they want their general manager back, whatever year she was general manager. The time that Teddy Long stepped down and she was general manager for a while. I don't remember exactly what year that was. Maybe 08, 07, something like that, doing the whole Edge thing. Next we have, looks like I'm stomping people. No correct tweets, no correct chat room answers. Looks like that may be two in a row. Who did Pat Patterson defeat to become the first Intercontinental Champion? The answers aren't correct yet. All right, let's see. We got Kane and Daniel Bryan defeating the Primetime Players. Good match between them two. Once again, just resurrecting the tag team division. I'm a fan of it. I think it's a good idea, and I'm looking forward to see more tag team action, you know, just down the line. Vicky and Cena in ring, and Vicky shows footage of Cena and AJ relationship. She shows a few things of footage, and Cena denies them all. And then Dolph Ziggler comes out, tries to talk to Cena, but Cena just kind of bullies Ziggler. You know, I guess he wasn't trying to be a star last night on Raw, but then Cena eventually walks away. I'll admit though, I'm kind of liking this Cena and Ziggler feud. It's a good way to take them both away from the title picture right now. It's a good filler feud. Eventually, I'm sure we'll see Cena back in the WWE title hunt, and then Ziggler cashing in his Money in the Bank, but a feud between the two I like. I think it's a good filler feud. And we've seen Cena in Ziggler matches, but not really a full-fledged feud between the two. So I'm a fan of it. I think it's a good idea. Kofi Kingston defeats Antonio Cesaro by disqualification. Miz and Cesaro attacks Kofi, and R-Truth makes the save. I don't know, man. R-Truth doesn't really get a lot of love from others, but I'm an R-Truth fan. I like him. You know, I prefer him on the mic more because he's funny on the mic. I hope that the thing is with R-Truth, what made him just kind of irrelevant is that he was, you know, he sold the little Jimmy part of his gimmick too much. You know, when he was a heel, he did the, you know, don't boo me, you should be booing yourselves. You know, and then the don't what me and all of that. And that was cool. I liked that. And then when he became a face, he was like, don't what me. And then it was, and then the crowd would still say what. And he said, okay, what me. So it fit, you know, as far as him being, you know, a face when he turned face, when he came back from his suspension. He's funny. You know, no matter what, he's funny on the mic. He had a segment with Ricardo Rodriguez for a second that was really funny. He had an in-ring segment with Ricardo. That was funny. You know, so put him back on the mic. You know, give him an opportunity. And plus, Cesaro, I like Cesaro just because I'm an ROH fan and I followed him, you know, for a while in the Indies and in ROH when he was Claudio Castagnoli. But Cesaro, his WWE tenure has not been that great to me. It's been a little bit less than what I've expected. It looks like they just kind of threw the U.S. title on him. And it's not, the U.S. title to me is not being very relevant. It hasn't been very relevant since the Zack Ryder petition angle last year. Santino, I love Santino. He's a great. He's great for the business. He's a Saturday Morning Slam All Star, which, you know, in this PG environment, that's what they need. So he's definitely an asset to the company. But you know, he did a horrible job as U.S. champion. His run was horrible. And I think that they need some type of revival in the U.S. title division. And I'm fine with R-Truth being a part of the mix as far as the U.S. title is concerned. So, hey, give him a shot. You know, Survivor Series, give him a shot against Antonio Cesaro. I'm all for it. And, hey, you know, Kofi Kingston has the Intercontinental title. Hey, you might as well give R-Truth the U.S. title. You know, there's a lot of heels out there that could be in the mix. I mean, Wade Barrett and R-Truth, you know, even Tensai and R-Truth. You know, there's a lot of mid-card heels. 3MB, anybody from 3MB. So there's a lot of mid-card heels out there that could benefit from a babyface being U.S. champ right now. And then we see Vicky and AJ backstage again. Vicky hires AJ and books her against Beth Phoenix. It was surprising to hear her say Beth Phoenix because I thought it was just kind of like an amicable leave because she's been gone and, you know, there's all the reports saying that, you know, she's leaving the WWE. And I wasn't expecting them to book it. You know, do a fire angle like they did everybody else, like they did Jericho and like they did the Bella Twins and so forth. So I wasn't expecting that, but I was thinking in my head like, so did she change her mind? Or, you know, because I was a bit puzzled to hear the name Beth Phoenix. But, you know, to me, she's one of the best wrestlers. I believe that her and Natalya are the two best wrestling divas on the roster. So, you know, it's good to see her back. Only if it was for one time. And then Vicky, and then after that, you know, like I said, she books her against Beth Phoenix, and we went on to the 3MB, Heath Slater and Jinder Mahal defeating Santino and Zack Ryder. I mean, we get this match almost every week now, I'm okay with Santino and Zack Ryder feuding with 3MB, which I'm still not sold on. But at the same time, it's like, you know, where is this going? I mean, you know, mid card feud. I'm cool with mid card feuds. Can everybody be a world champion or in the contention? So. But this whole 3MB thing, I'm not sold. I'm not giving up on the possibility of liking them. But to me, it just kind of took a step back because I end up liking Heath Slater during the whole Raw 1000 Legends angle. I ended up liking Heath Slater because of that, but I don't know, just the alliance with Jinder Mahal and Drew McIntyre is just very weird to me. They debuted new music too, which was okay, but Heath Slater's music just really fit him. I mean, they just had something, they really had something going with Heath Slater, but I don't know. I guess they're trying their best to just make some relevance out of some mid-carders. And then AJ defeats Beth Phoenix, but Vicky comes out and orders the match to be restarted. Beth Phoenix quickly wins after attacking her from behind and getting her and her finisher. No correct answer for the correct answer, which is Ted DiBiase. He beat Ted DiBiase back in 79. Next question is who were in the Mean Street Posse other than Shane McMahon? Who were the members of the Mean Street Posse? Then we go on to a Sheamus in-ring promo. Big Show comes out, and they were really plugging the Sheamus promo, which was a little surprising. I mean, I don't know. It's just, I mean, just plugging. I don't see the point of just really plugging the Sheamus promo. I think they had like three, you know, setups for that, and it was just kind of odd to me. But he just cuts a promo, just like, you know, he would if he was on SmackDown or any other Raw. And the Big Show comes out, and he cuts a promo, and then eventually Sheamus does put him in White Noise, which was very impressive. He put him in White Noise at Hell in a Cell, too. But it was also impressive that he put him in White Noise again. He seemed like it was a lot easier. Well, he probably wasn't. He probably had a lot more energy on Raw than Hell in a Cell, because admittedly, Big Show and Sheamus match was one of the best matches of the night. So, and that's really you know, that it's really different, you know, to say that when it's affiliated with the Big Show. I mean, no disrespect, but he's not the greatest wrestler in the world. But they put on a heck of a match. So, kudos to the both of them. They did a great job. And then eventually, Vicky fires Beth Phoenix backstage, and then that's when I thought in my head, oh, okay, now I get it. So that's the send-off for Beth Phoenix. Got Pete Gas, which is correct. Got Joey Abs, but there was one more. Next, we got Team Road Scholars defeating Mysterio and Sin Cara. I'm cool. Yeah, Rodney is correct. Yes, correct. Great job, chat room. Rodney is the correct answer. Next we have what was Sandman's name in WCW? What was the Sandman's name in WCW? All right. Team Road Scholars defeats Mysterio and Sin Cara. You know, this is cool. I mean, you know, they're just putting them over Road Scholars. But the thing is, though, they were really pumping up Sin Cara and Rey Mysterio for a while. So it's kind of surprising that they would have them lose like they have been. So I mean, they won at Hell in a Cell. But and they were on a bit of a losing streak beforehand. So I don't know how they're trying to build Mysterio and Cara. It seems like eventually they're, you know, going to have them fight it at WrestleMania. So we'll see how they do that. Even, you know, I was thinking like even having a tag team title run. And I thought about how would that happen. The only feasible way I can see that happening would be Road Scholars defeating Kane and Daniel Bryan, and then feuding with Mysterio and Sin Cara. Mysterio and Sin Cara winning, and then eventually losing and compete against each other. That may can draw out the next. boy, it was almost November, so the next 5 months. So, yes, hack is the right answer. Hack or hardcore hack. Seems like the right answers are flying again after a couple stumps. Next question is, what was Conan's name in the WWE? Back when, before he was Conan, before he was known as Conan, he was under a mask back in the WWE, the early Raw days. Actually had a match at the first Raw. Alberto Del Rio defeats Justin Gabriel. Justin Gabriel goes right back to mid-card jobber again. I mean, I don't understand the point of that. I was looking at the match and I was looking at the chemistry between the two, and I was thinking in my head, like, Justin Gabriel, I mean, you know, I've been pushing Justin Gabriel for a while. I think he has what it takes to become at least an upper mid-carder, and they had chemistry. Alberto Del Rio and Justin Gabriel, it just looks like a good feud. But, you know, Justin Gabriel's just another victim of jobbing to someone else, so it's unfortunate that they're using him in that way. Looks like they just threw him in the U.S. title feud, you know, just to have somebody be in that position. So that's poor booking in my eyes. I mean, they really need to have more emphasis in their mid-card titles. I don't think. I mean, the Intercontinental title has been okay. Miz beat Christian. I think Christian really revived it, and then Miz beat Christian, and then Kofi Kingston beat Miz. The Intercontinental title has been okay, but the U.S. title picture just not so much. Team Punk and Team Foley. Punk and Foley chooses teams. Heyman actually introduces Punk's team, which is The Miz, Team Road Scholars, Alberto Del Rio, and CM Punk, of course. And then Team Foley, Foley introduces his team as Kofi Kingston, Team Hell No, Randy Orton, and then the surprise, it was just real cheesy to me. Punk says, okay, well, you know, I can see eliminating them, you know, eliminating them. I'm paraphrasing, basically. Talks about, you know, how they're going to get eliminated and just single out Foley. And then Foley says, you know, that would be a good idea if I was wrestling. And the next member is this guy. And so 100% of me said, okay, Ryback. And who was it? Ryback. So the suspense just wasn't a good idea. I mean, if you're going to have Ryback save Foley in the beginning of the show, I mean, and then Ryback come fresh out of a, you know, match with CM Punk, you know, there was no suspense in that. So I really didn't think it was a good idea to book it that way. And I wasn't really sold. So, what was Conan's name in the WWE back when he was under a mask? On to WWE SmackDown. We get Orton with an in-ring promo, interrupted by Alberto Del Rio. Orton attacked by Wade Barrett. Kane defeats Cody Rhodes. Eve, Oksana, Caitlin, and Layla talk about who attacked Kaylin. Tay Long explains situation further, and Eve denies. Booker T comes in and books a triple threat match at Hell in a Cell, and then a tag match for SmackDown. Wade Barrett defeats Randy Orton, which is a bit of a shocker right before the pay-per-view. But to me, just logic, basically, I don't know. Just the Randy Orton loss was just a guaranteed win at Hell in a Cell for me, and so that's exactly what happened. So it was a little bit predictable for me if since Wade Barrett won. It's definitely a good thing for Wade Barrett, but it really didn't mean anything because he lost on Raw. So we'll see where they go with Wade Barrett. The answer looks like stumped some people on that one, too. Max Moon is who Conan was. I believe he, I'm almost sure about the fact that he had a match at the first Raw against Shawn Michaels, if I'm not mistaken. What was Justin Credible known as in the WWE? What was Justin Credible known as in the WWE? On to SmackDown. And then Orton and Alberto Del Rio, they fight post-match. Even Oksana defeats Caitlyn and Layla. Whatever. And then Damian Sandow defeats Daniel Bryan. Good match between the two. I guess they split the two, you know, and then ended up into a disqualification. So, like I said, I'm okay with the tag team division, but to me, it just really seemed like everything was just kind of abruptly put at a halt because of the teams that was put together at on Raw at the end. I mean, you have three feuds, Punk and Ryback, the tag team feud, Orton and so you have four feuds, Orton and Alberto Del Rio, and then Miz and Kofi. Out of those four feuds, three of them were for titles. So basically, the setup is there won't be an Intercontinental title match. It's one of the big four pay-per-views, one of the most traditional pay-per-views. There won't be a WWE title match, which is a bit odd. And then there won't be a tag team title match. And that's really odd to me. So I am, and the thing is, there's only 3 weeks to build. I mean, there were 6 weeks to build Hell in a Cell, and it wasn't done, you know, the best. There's only 3 weeks to build one of your biggest pay-per-views, and, you know, the history of WWE pay-per-views. You got 3 weeks to build it, and your teams that you put together basically takes away three title matches. And so you have the Divas title left, which will probably involve either Caitlyn or Layla, which is stale. And then you have the U.S. title feud, which is probably the only refreshing feud, which you'll probably see R-Truth and Antonio Cesaro. So, I don't know. I mean, if they, like I said, if they formulate another mid-card match, you know, to atone for that, I think that it'll be a little bit better, but I'm still very dissatisfied that basically we won't see three title matches on one of the big four pay-per-views. So, yes, Otto Montoya is indeed the correct answer for Justin Credible's previous gimmick in the WWE. Next question is, who was known as the Eurocontinental Champion? Who was known as the Eurocontinental Champion? On to Impact Wrestling. Hogan talks to Hardy in office. Hardy goes out of office to see opponents in hallway. And there was some weird voiceover describing the opponents when he walked out. Definitely, I mean, it was a pre-tape type of thing, but it was just really weird that it was like some slow motion. And yeah, trust me, I don't want to be in the mind of Jeff Hardy ever. So that was a bit weird. RVD defeats Zema Ion. Post-match carbon footprint by Matt Morgan and cuts promo. Okay. You know, I'm not too big on the fact that it just seems like, you know, they try to do. It just seems like Matt Morgan always reaches a ceiling. I don't see this at all, you know, setting up some type of world title run for Matt Morgan. I may be mistaken. I mean, this is all he's got. I mean, TNA world champion is probably going to be the pinnacle moment of his career, which isn't really slighting TNA, but at the same time, like, if he doesn't reach that much, I mean, that's a little bit sad. And I do like the feud. I kind of called it out. I do like the potential feud between RVD and Joey Ryan. So I think that's a good spot to put Joey Ryan at this point in time. Austin Aries eavesdrops on meeting. Daniels and Kazarian in-ring promo interrupted by Chavo and Hernandez setting them up for a tag team match at Turning Point. Mr. Anderson eliminated. By the way, this was Championship Thursday. Scuffle and challenge with Aries outside of office. Some weird part about the programming that on Impact. We heard like some Anderson kind of backed up, and we heard kind of like an end cut type of thing, and it was just like, oh, okay, well. There's your pre-tapes, or either pre-taped or, you know, if it was live, which it may have been, you know, it was just a little bit odd that we did, you know, hear that. You know, it was a mishap that I thought was pretty funny. You know, stuff happens, but that was pretty funny to me. Aces and Eights discuss next attack. They throw a dart to a wrestler and... you know, the suspense is who they're going to attack that night, whoever the dart land on, which we didn't see. Samoa Joe defeats Robbie T, TV title. I like what they're doing with Samoa Joe with the TV championship. Good idea. Bully Ray eliminated. He's focused on D-Von. Aries defeats Mr. Anderson. Tara and Brooke backstage segment. Tara defeats Miss Testmacher. Brooke comes out and says ODB challenges Jesse at Open Fight Night this coming Thursday. Joseph Part talks to Hulk Hogan in office. I wonder, it's just kind of suspense, a little suspenseful wondering what Joseph Part's, what his part of the whole Aces and Eights angle is. I hope he's not a part of it. I like his whole lawyer thing. I think it's a good idea. I hope he's not a part of it. Bully Ray and D-Von with Aces and Eights talk in ring. Bully Ray challenges D-Von at Open Fight Night. Going into Turning Point, you know, Bully Ray challenges D-Von at Open Fight Night. This may cause a swerve. We may see Bully Ray a part of Aces and Eights next week. Maybe a little swerve, which I think will be, you know, something new and fresh because, like I said before, and like I'm going to keep saying, this angle is just getting drawn out. I mean, they need to do some reveals. I would rather see, and there's some reports that, you know, it's going to be another, you know, 6 or so months. Just basically the predicted time frame is about another 6 months or so, and if they're going to do that, they need to hurry up, and they need a ringleader that needs to try to go for the world title or something like that, and then, you know, other Aces and Eights members go for tag team titles and so forth. You know, I can see Samoa Joe feuding with someone, but whatever, just the whole reveal part of this is just getting very, very stale, and they need to hurry up quick. So hopefully we get a reveal Open Fight Night. I think D-Von kind of teased the VP being revealed at Turning Point, so we'll see who that is. Hogan chooses Angle versus Hardy, and then Jeff Hardy defeats Kurt Angle. Great, great match between the two. That was, I was thoroughly impressed at the match. It was one of the match of the years, one of the matches of the year candidates to me. To me, it's this match and then Bobby Roode and James Storm at Bound for Glory. Those are the two best matches that I can think of right now. Austin Aries and Bobby Roode, when Austin Aries won the world title, that was a good match too. Austin Aries and Samoa Joe at Destination X was also a good match. Those are the couple. No, I'm sorry. It was Slammiversary, I believe. That's Austin Aries went against Samoa Joe because Destination X, he actually won the title, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, because he turned in the X Division title and won it. So, yeah, some good matches. Those are a couple good matches I can think of. But post-match attack against Austin Aries, post-match attack by Austin Aries to Jeff Hardy and then Angle attack backstage by Aces and Eights. One thing I will say about Austin Aries, making him a heel so quick after they, you know, made him a face, and he was way over as a face, but as a heel to me, you know, it just seems like he's clouded by the whole Aces and Eights thing, and I'm just not sold as, I'm not too interested in Austin Aries as a heel right now, because I think it's just bad timing for him to be a heel right now. It's just not good. And then all the other times he was a heel, he wasn't like, you know, he wasn't like main event level. So he was a main event level when he was over as a face. So I don't think this is going to work out. He basically tells Jeff Jarrett that he's going to fight him at Turning Point, which, I'm pretty sure that's pretty much a lock who's going to win that. Intercontinental Champion Kurt Angle, indeed. Where was Andre the Giant built from? Next question is, where was Andre the Giant built from? Real quick, ROH, Jay Lethal wins the Survivor of the Fittest tournament. I'm a big fan of that, and I'm liking what they're doing with Jay Lethal. He's my favorite wrestler in ROH, and I definitely hope that they give the title on him. He's well deserved of it. French Alps, yes. If anybody want to say the city, if anybody want to say that too, but yes, the French Alps is, I'll accept the French Alps, but if anybody want to say the city, that's fine as well. All right, flavor of the week is the biggest heel turn, the wrestling's greatest heel turn theme song. So basically I wrote an article about on a Bleacher Report today. Go down the list here. Rikishi was one that I was thinking of. I didn't put it in my article, and then I had a couple comments about it, and it's kind of confirmed the fact that I at least gave him kind of a reader's choice honorable mention. I don't think he had the greatest heel turn theme song, but it was definitely memorable, so I'll definitely give it to him. And the whole I did it for the Rock angle that he had, that heel angle was that kind of, well, that actually did propel him in main event status, so that was probably the highest point of Rikishi's career. Scott Steiner, 98, man, he just got real, real huge. And then he still had his long hair and was wearing the singlet with Rick Steiner, but it was just kind of like he would wear just kind of solid colors, and he kind of built a little bit of an ego, and then that kind of culminated at a Super Brawl match with the Steiners against the Outsiders. And so I was, he became heel and just didn't look back. I mean, he was the man in 2001. I believe he had fought at Super Brawl that year. He beats Kevin Nash in I think it was like 2 out of 3 falls match, and then he beats DDP at the last pay per view Greed. And the false count anywhere match, I think it was, and then he loses to Booker T at the final Nitro. So, yeah, I mean, they really, really did some things with Scott Steiner as a heel. Had a superstar Billy Graham look, blonde, you know, cut his hair, dyed it blonde, had a blonde goatee with like a black just kind of strap in the middle, and it was a good look for Scott Steiner. Still has the same look. Eddie Guerrero, his heel theme song, his last heel theme song was really really menacing. It just had a real rugged type of sound to it. I liked it a lot. It really fit his heel role. He was just real maniacal. He turned against Guerrero after he turned against Mysterio after Mysterio beat him at WrestleMania. They were tag team champions at the time, and they were fighting against Eminem. And Guerrero pulls a heel turn and suplexes Mysterio on the steps. That was a brutal spot. So Eddie Guerrero definitely. Booker T is King Booker days. Won the King of the Ring in 2006, and the King Booker, that was definitely it was comedic to me. Booker T is one of my all-time favorite wrestlers, and I was in support of it the whole time, and I was a big fan of it, actually. I remember going to see pay-per-views at, like, local, like, restaurants and stuff like that back in 06, and everybody would call me Booker T, and so... And I would do the whole. I have a replica of the World Heavyweight title, and I would bring it in and do the whole Booker T impersonation, and just light up the place. It was a lot of fun. So 2006 was a really really good year for King Booker, and probably the pinnacle of his WCW. I mean, excuse me, the pinnacle of his WWE run. And his first and only World Heavyweight title in the WWE. Green Elbow French Alps is when is where Andre was built from. And so we'll go on to the next one, which is Edge. Edge he made his heel turn in 2004 on Taboo Tuesday. And kept the same heel turn music for the better part of his whole main event tenure. So that music really, you know, distinguished him as a credible main event heel and one of the most decorated champions of WWE history. Next is Triple H. He had some, you know, he started off as Hunter Hearst Helmsley, and then eventually. You know, was a heel and DX and turned face eventually, and then he turned heel in 1999, turned on X-Pac and joined the corporation. Then he really solidified his Hall of Fame career by forming the McMahon Helmsley era. I think it was Armageddon 1999. He had a match against Vince McMahon. And Stephanie McMahon turned on Vince, and when he joined the corporation, he had the My Time theme. He let go of the long tights and had some short tights and had, like, taped fist and cut his hair a bit, and just was a whole different look to him. And it was a good revamp for Triple H. Jake Roberts, man, I tell you, I mean, Jake Roberts is one of the best minds to me in the history of WCW. I mean, excuse me, the history of WWE. He was in WCW too, but didn't do too well in WCW. One of the best minds in the WWE. He's just an amazing wrestler, and he was involved in an angle where the Ultimate Warrior went to him because he was feuding with Warrior at the time was feuding with The Undertaker, and he wanted to, you know, feel the dark side and be strengthened by Jake Roberts. And he took him through a series of tests, locking him in the coffin, burying him alive, and so forth. And then his last test was He put him in a room full of snakes. And he locked him in there, and he said, "Never trust a snake." And basically, it was revealed that Undertaker, Paul Bearer, and Jake Roberts were in cahoots all the whole time. And so that was a really, really good angle. And then the whole trust me thing, and you know, it was a really, really good heel song. He feuded with Randy Savage shortly after as well. Shawn Michaels turns against Marty Jannetty, 91, I believe it was, episode of the Barbershop, and was having some dissension at the time, and they were kind of going back and forth about a recent loss, and then they kind of made amends, but Jannetty turned around and turned back around to a nice, swift, sweet chin music. So, you know, that was a big deal for, you know, for Shawn Michaels. That was really a breaking point for Shawn Michaels. And then the whole sexy boy thing came out. And eventually, initially it was Sherry Martel that was behind the vocals, or Sensational Sherry. And then that didn't last long. Eventually, Shawn Michaels, he actually became the vocalist of the group. So, I mean, of the song. So, yeah, I mean, you know, and he kept it the whole way through. Yeah, so. Yeah, it was 1991, December 2nd, 1991 at the Barbershop. So, the next is Vince McMahon, the whole no chance. That became his theme song, because it was originally a theme song for the Royal Rumble pay-per-view back in 99, feuding with Stone Cold Steve Austin. And It just fit him so much that it became his theme song, and still is. Undertaker, the big evil gimmick, that was one of the most drastic changes that we saw of the Undertaker. You know, we were so used to the gothic dead man Taker, and 2000 he was gone for a while for injuries. And he came back in 2000 and repackaged himself as the biker gimmick. And then 2001, he turns heel and cuts his hair and changes his music to the whole "You're Gonna Pay." And the big evil gimmick worked for a while. It was a different look for The Undertaker, very different than what we're used to over the years. Steve Austin pulled one of the biggest swerves at WrestleMania 17 by turning heel. During his match against The Rock, aligned himself with probably his biggest rival in WWE history, which is Vince McMahon, led into the alliance angle, and he became a face again later in 2001. But he had a few heel theme songs, but one of them was very, very popular. Then The Rock, he had three notable heel turns throughout his career, but the one to me that just really I loved was the 2003 heel turn with the Hollywood style Rock. I thought that was hilarious. The whole night out with the Rock concerts that he had. In Sacramento and Toronto as a heel, that was hilarious, and real cocky and arrogant. It was hilarious. The whole slow music going on, you know, in the beginning, and it was absolutely so incredibly funny. And then lastly, Hulk Hogan, Hollywood Hogan. I believe it was the most impactful heel turn in the history of wrestling. I mean, you know, childhood fans. You know, Hulk Hogan was just a larger-than-life type of guy in the 80s into the early 90s, and the real American music and all of that. And it was just, so memorable. And then, you know, Bash at the Beach 1996, he turns his back on WCW and joins the NWO, well, forms the NWO with Scott Hall and Kevin Nash. And then he has the NWO music. He also had his own individual music that was very popular. So, you know, definitely one of the most biggest swerves, you know, in wrestling history was just Hulk Hogan just totally reviving, you know, his character, or just reviving himself. You know, 1996, you know, he was around for a while and very much established, and not really, you know, he already reached the pinnacle of his career, and, you know, he definitely heightened, you know, he definitely spiked his career up with that heel turn. So yeah, those are some of the there was some really good, great heel turn themes. Those are the greatest, in my opinion. I'm sure there's a few others that I did not mention. A couple that I'll mention, some honorable mentions. Bobby Roode, when he turned heel recently last year, November of last year, I believe it was, he had some type of orchestra. He had vocals in his theme song, but his orchestra style theme song was very cavalier like, and I really like his theme song. And then Lex Luger, when he came back in WCW towards the latter parts, and he had a really regal sounding music as a heel. So, but the thing is, that could be a little bit argued, because he came back and helping Sting, and then he eventually turned heel shortly after. So, but his music was still pretty cool. So, all right, great show, great show. That concludes this week's show. Next week we'll be here, God willing, 347-884-8452. Tuesday night, next Tuesday night at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. Call in with your thoughts. Put that number in your back pocket. Tweet at Crave Wrestling. Tune in live. Fill the chat room with your thoughts. And, of course, there'll be trivia, as always. In a couple weeks, we're going to actually start having a trivia contest and actually getting points together. It depends on how many people actually sign up for it, for the trivia. But in the coming weeks, we're going to be doing some more things with the trivia. Have any thoughts? Email if you wanted a flavor of the week topic. Email it at Crave Wrestling. Email it at cravewrestling@gmail.com. Any tweets that you want to have throughout the week about the upcoming Raw, tweet it at Crave Wrestling. And if it's a real good tweet, we'll say it live on air. Like Crave Wrestling on Facebook. There's also a Crave Wrestling PayPal account. Support Crave Wrestling financially. And thank you so much. Thank you so much for your support. Numbers are just continuing to grow. We're going to have some surprises coming up here soon, as far as some guests and things of that nature. So just stay tuned. Stick with Crave Wrestling. Check the Pancakes and Power Slam show out Tuesdays at 11. Until next week, have a great week of wrestling, and God bless. Goodbye.